Good morning. Turn your Bibles with me. Let's begin reading right away to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy 4, verse 12 says, "Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe." This morning we want to talk to our young people, although I'm hoping that the things we'll talk about are applicable to anyone, whether you're 13 or 93. I'm hoping that we'll be able to find things in the concepts that we discussed this morning that will help us no matter what age we are. It's that time again, isn't it? Back to school time. And time has taken kind of a weird characteristic, right? It's hard to believe that since the restrictions and lockdowns and things that we've been going through, that time marches on. And now it's time for our young people to get back to school. And even that's kind of weird for them. Some are doing face-to-face or at least in-person instruction. Others are doing online instruction. Still others have been pushed back to start a little bit later in the year. And so back to school really is kind of a weird time. But it's not just weird because of what's been going on around the country and around the world. But it's a strange time for young people, no matter what is going on in life. There's a different atmosphere at school. I remember when I was a kid, each school had a different checklist of what you were supposed to buy to go back to school, right? If you were in elementary school, there was a certain list of things that you needed. If you were in junior high, there was another list. You know what I'm talking about. I remember all the way back to where the only things I needed, my checklist contained two items. One was the Big Chief tablet. Remember that? And the other was that big fat pencil, right? It looked like a log with a lead sticking out the end of it. Well, checklists have changed, haven't they? I mean, now you need a whole host of different things. You know, you need internet access. Some schools are giving away iPads for their kids to get online and to be instructed in that way. But it's not just the checklist that has changed, has it? The problems in school have also gotten different. I remember when I was in school, the worst problem we had were it seemed like the guys wanted to show how macho they were by having fights. And it was a big deal. They'd fight each other and then, you know, maybe there was a suspension, maybe not, but afterwards they would be friends again. Nowadays, things are different, aren't they? Nowadays, a lot of schools have police forces within the school, armed policemen. In some schools, there are metal detectors to catch weapons as kids are going in and out of the building. There's even nurseries to care for the babies of the unwed high school mothers. So things have changed, right? And that reminds us that when we're checking off our things off that checklist to take back to school, there are some things you can't go to Walmart for. There are some things that you can get only from within yourself and trust in God. And so while our young people are thinking about the things they need to take back to school, you want to put stuff in your backpack, make sure maybe you got something to write with, something to write on, or something to type on. There are some other things that I hope that they'll take to heart, that they'll take back to school with them, that they'll take into their lives with them. So let's talk about things to take back to school. First, take honesty. Now, honesty is simply the characteristic of being pure, of being genuine, of being a stand-up person. We might replace that word honesty with integrity. Take integrity. Be a person of integrity. Be the kind of person that your word is your bond. You say what you mean and you mean what you say, and everybody knows that there's no duplicity. There's no deceit about you. Be an honest person. And be an honest person certainly before God. Galatians 6 verse 7 tells us that we should not be deceived because God is not mocked. Now, I know sometimes the kids keep secrets and they seem to be able to fool a lot of people around them. But please understand, you can't fool God. He always knows what's up. And eventually, somehow, some way, The secrets that you keep that are sinful and wrong, that maybe no one else knows about, are going to come back to hurt you and to haunt you. Don't be deceived. God isn't mocked. Be honest, first of all, with Him. Be honest also with your friends, your fellow students, with your peers. Proverbs 11 verse 9 says, "With his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor." I used to be friends with a guy. Was a nice guy. A lot of fun to be around with. The only problem he had was he couldn't tell the truth. And you didn't know if what he was telling you was actually right or not because you couldn't trust him. And it got to the point where nobody took anything he said seriously. Even when he wanted people to take him seriously, they wouldn't do it because they just couldn't trust him. He had a track record of being untrustworthy. Those people who you're going to call your friends, those people who you're going to invest a lot of time with, they deserve the best of you. And you deserve to know that they're giving you the best of themselves. Be honest with them. Be honest also, certainly, with your teachers. Galatians 6 verse 6 says, "The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him." And I understand, I get, that this passage in Galatians 6 is talking about spiritual things. The one who teaches spiritual things to you, well, you should consider him for what he's trying to tell you. But there's more to it, I think, than that. That when somebody assumes the position of trying to teach you something, of making you better somehow, and certainly your classroom teachers are trying to do that for you, when they're doing that, you should consider what they're doing and be honest with them. Sometimes there's this consideration between students and teachers. Students considers the teachers as the enemy, as them. And they withhold themselves from giving themselves completely to what's going on in class to your teachers. I remember that there were some teachers that I had that some students were just openly antagonistic to, in spite of the fact that you could tell, even I could tell as a young person, that those teachers are really trying their best, not just to be friends with that student, but to help him to be better. And the more they met with resistance, well, the harder it was to get that kid to want to be a better person. Be honest with your teachers, and certainly be honest with your parents. Proverbs 15 verse 20 says, "A wise son makes a father and the mother," that's my insertion, "glad." You know, contrary to popular belief, your parents love you. And they are the ones who, more than anyone else in the world, helps you. Why in the world would you want to keep anything from them? When you're going through some difficulty, when you're going through some hardship, when you're going through something that you think nobody understands, and certainly my parents don't get it, you might be surprised that if you just took the time to talk with them, how much you'll find that they really do understand. Because your parents weren't always dinosaurs. At one time, they were young dinosaurs. They were young, and they went through the same kind of stuff that you as a young person go through. And I guarantee you that they'll get it. When my daughters were growing up, I used to tell them to be honest with me. If they did something that was wrong, just tell me about it. And I promised them that as long as they were honest with me up front, they wouldn't get into trouble. Now, there may still be consequences for their action that they would have to deal with, but if they were just honest with me, I promised them, "I'm not going to get mad. I just want you to be honest with me." But I guaranteed them that if they lied to me and I found out later, there would absolutely be trouble. Because I wanted them to know that what they could do first off was come to me with a problem. I wasn't always consistent as I should have been in that. But I wanted my daughters to know more than anything that mom and dad were for them. And we wanted them to know that they could talk to us about anything. Of course, I had daughters, so the first one they run to is mama all the time. And that's okay. I don't get daughters anyway. But be honest. And most of all, be honest with yourself. In Acts chapter 24, verse 16, you won't have time to turn there before I tell you what Paul says. Paul says, "I strive to keep a clear conscience before God and man." God gave you a conscience. He gave you a conscience to use, that still small voice that speaks to you when you're making a decision, that tells you whether or not something you're doing is right or wrong. It's your conscience talking to you. Now, your conscience is only going to work as well as you inform it, right? So if you fill your conscience with this, with the Word of God, it's going to steer you clear. It's going to make sure that you know what's right and what's wrong. Paul says, I always strive to maintain a clear conscience before God and man. You know what Paul was saying? I want to be true to myself. I want to be true to what I know, to what is right, and God is the one who helps me do that. So take honesty back to school with you. And while we're checking off that checklist, take back with you respect. Specifically, respect for authority. I know that authority is kind of a dirty word to some kids, and we're seeing the ill fruit of the lack of respect in our society. I read a quote recently that said, there's just as much authority in the house now as there ever was, except now the children are exercising it. And you look at the riots and the things that are going on in the streets of some cities, and you see that really a lot of what's going on is being wielded by people who are barely out of their teens. They're young people who were involved in anarchy and lawlessness and crime and immorality of every kind of stripe. Why is that? I'm going to say it's because they never learned proper respect for authority at home, where it ought to be learned. So think about what it is your parents are teaching you as far as getting yourself to obey them. Why is that? Is it because they like to keep you under their thumb? No. It's because they want you to understand what it's like to respect authority, because you're going to find it everywhere you go out in the world. So first, learn it at home. Colossians 3 verse 20 says, children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. The companion passage over in Ephesians 6 says, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. I like that. Straight and to the point. This is right. And you know it as well as I do, right? You know that obeying your parents is the right thing to do. Nobody has to tell you that. I mean, that's kind of inborn in us. We recognize that our parents, they're our first authority figures. They're the ones who tell us if we're going to reach for something hot. No, don't do that. Okay, we understand the kind of authority they have, right? But there's more to it than just realizing that they have the right to boss us around. It's also understanding that they wield their authority with the desire to make us better. There isn't anything your parents are gonna talk to you about that isn't somehow designed in the very back of it to make you a better person. That's what they want. They want to make you a better person. They want to prepare you for what's going on in the real world. And that's part of what our schools are supposed to do. When you take that respect and you learn it at home, then you take it to school with you. Romans 13 verse 7 says, render to all what is due them. Tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Now, in the passage there, Paul is talking about government. You're supposed to understand the role of government. Earlier in that passage, he tells us about obeying those institutions that are in authority, because God is the one who basically invented authority, right? He's the highest authority that there is. But there's a bigger thing going on here. Paul says, you give honor to whom honor is due. Now, we usually don't think of our teachers as being honorable, but think about this. Whether it's your teachers or the administrators at school, your parents have entrusted you to them to help you, to help mold you, not just to try and get a bunch of facts into your head so that hopefully maybe you'll be ready for college or for a job when you come out of high school, but more than that, so that you'll understand what it takes to be a responsible and an active, productive citizen in this world. Why? Because you have something to offer. And your teachers want to help you bring that out. They want you to realize your full potential. So respect the position that you have. It doesn't mean that you have to like them. I had some teachers that I wasn't very crazy about, but I really liked that they took their job seriously enough to help me be a better person. So take respect for authority, learn it at home, and then take it to school with you. And then finally, take courage. And we're going to look at courage in a couple different ways. First of all, you should realize that, yes, there's a lot of scary things going on right now. And I'm wearing blue evidence on my face to show that, right? You may have to wear masks when you go back to school, and you may wonder, well, am I really safe with this? Should I really be doing this? The first thing you need to do is put your trust in God. It's really as simple as that. Courage simply means standing firm in the face of fear. Courage doesn't mean that you're not afraid anymore. Courage just means that you're going to stand up in spite of what's going on. Courage is saying your prayers and doing what you need to do in spite of the fear that's facing you. And you're going to be looking at a lot of things in this school year, as you do every year, that's going to challenge you. You know, when you look through the Bible at some of the young people that there are presented to us as examples, it's hard to find better examples than Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book of Daniel, right? Whereas young people, their faith was challenged. They were told that they had to do something that was against what they believed that their God wanted them to do. And what did they do? They held firm, right? They didn't do those things. And it not only gained the respect of those who were trying to force them to do those things, but more than anything, it bolstered them. Having the courage to do the right thing made them even stronger to stand in other situations. You see that with Daniel throughout his life. From a man barely out of his teens at the beginning of the book, all the way to where he's an old man at the end of the book, Daniel stood fast. Well, you know what? You're going to be challenged this school year to lay aside some things that are right for what everybody else is doing. Let me just challenge you, first of all, that if you're going to exercise your courage, if you're going to have the guts, the godly guts, to do what's right, then you're going to have to understand what the right thing is. So let's talk for a moment about some things you're going to have to take courage to stand against. You're going to have to stand against immodest dress. Go with me to 1 Peter chapter 4, chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. In 1 Peter 3, beginning in verse 3, Peter says, "Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God." Now you notice he doesn't say anything here about how tight clothes are, about how much they reveal. What he says, what you really want to reveal, is what kind of person you are. And you can be just as immodest wearing clothes that cover you from head to foot as you can wearing clothes that reveal everything about your body. What Peter is telling us here is, don't use your clothes to draw attention to your body, but rather let the inner person that you are be the thing that attracts people to you. And one of the things that I remember doing with my daughters when they were growing up was going clothes shopping with them. I hated that. Not just because, well, never mind. They were indecisive girls, okay? And so it took forever. But the other thing was that it was really hard to find modest clothes for young ladies. It seems every year the fashions get higher and higher and tighter and tighter. And it's hard to find clothes that are really going to let a young person not just exhibit their body, but exhibit the kind of person they are inside. It got tough to do that. And I'm sure that now it's just as tough, or maybe even harder. And how terrible it is that everywhere we look around in our society, we find that young ladies are being encouraged to show their bodies more than their spirit. More and more and more. How terrible it is that we're finding that young men are being encouraged to dress, I call it slouchily, right? You let stuff hang down parts of your body. Whatever happened to just dressing in a way that showed respect for everyone else around you. I want our young people to consider how they dress. And it doesn't matter what everyone else at school is doing. You can be the shining example of somebody who stands out for modesty in your school. But be warned, you might get some flack for it. That's where you're going to need courage. Take courage in refusing drugs and alcohol. In 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter's talking to those who have already made that decision and how sometimes people who they used to know think they're weird because of it. In 1 Peter 4 and in verse 3, Peter says, "The time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lusts, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they're surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you." I relate to this passage. I remember that when Cheryl and I became Christians, we said no to a lot of the things that we used to indulge in with our friends who were friends at that time. And they didn't get it. It's like, why in the world would you want to stop doing this? This is fun. And I want to be upfront with you. Yes, sin is a hoot. Sin is fun. But if you have put on Jesus Christ in baptism, or if you're thinking of doing that, you're a different person. You're not just somebody who says no to things like this. You're somebody who says yes to the things that are right and good and moral and pure. Take courage to think about gangs. Proverbs 1 verse 10, we won't turn there, but in Proverbs 1 verse 10, the wise man who wrote Proverbs says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not go with them." And that's what's going to happen. Most times, young people are looking for some place to belong, right? And unfortunately, those cliques that they join turn into more than cliques. They turn into gangs. They turn into a group of people who think that they have something in common that they won't absolutely share with anybody else. And sometimes those things are wrong. Not just morally wrong. Sometimes they're also criminally wrong. We want to make sure that we think enough of ourselves, at least, not to put ourselves in a situation where we're going to choose friends that are bad for us. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 15, he says, "Bad company corrupts good morals." You know that's right. It's still true. Take courage to think about what it is your teachers are teaching you concerning where we came from. Look with me in Romans chapter 1. Romans 1. I got another new Bible, and you know what that means, right? Sticky pages. Takes me a while to get there. Romans chapter 1. Look with me in verse 20. In Romans 1 and in verse 20, Paul says, "For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." When I was in junior high, and I was flirting with religion, I came across a little tract, a little tiny skinny thing, that really was just a little comic book that talked about how evolution had to be absolutely wrong. And so I took it to my science teacher, because we were studying evolution at that time. And I took it to him and I says, "Maybe you want to read this." And he took it from me and he tore it up in front of me and he belittled me for thinking that I could change his mind with a little comic book. Well, yeah, I was naive and I didn't know my arguments for creation and all that stuff. I just thought that, you know, this says he's wrong, so he must be wrong, right? Well, God tells us Himself in His own Word that when people look at what's been created and they fail to realize that He's the one behind it, He says they have no excuse. God has shown by the evidence of what He has made that He's there. In verse 25, it says, "They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator who is blessed forever." That just means that man thinks that he's it, that he is the big dog in the world and that there is nothing or no one else that can possibly top him. But God says, "You haven't considered me." If you're going to be taking a natural science or a biology class or something like that in your school course this year, I guarantee you that your teachers are going to present evolution to you, not as a theory, but as fact. And so that means if you're going to be able to withstand that, you're going to have to do your own homework. And there's a ton of great places that you can go. There's a wonderful, wonderful website called Answers in Genesis. Just Google it sometime. They're easy to read. They're easy to understand. And they'll help you combat what your teachers are going to be telling you is fact when God says, no, it's not. Take courage to stand against this. Take courage also to stand against dancing. In Galatians chapter 5, look there with me. In Galatians 5 and in verse 19, Paul says, now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality. And we'll stop there. There's a whole bunch more to the list, and he goes on. But these things that Paul talks about in verse 19, they're all related. And they're all related by a sexual component. Now, how does this fit in with dancing? There was a time, I guess, some time back, when there wasn't anything inherently sensual about dancing. But those times are long gone. And I regret very much that, I don't know what it's going to look like now in this coronavirus age, but I regret that our schools think that dances are a wholesome activity to involve our young people in. Let me be as clear and as plain to you as I possibly can. Parents, they are not. My son-in-law, because of his job as a high school teacher, sometimes has to chaperone those. He has to as a part of his job. Otherwise, he wouldn't be caught dead at a dance. But because he's a teacher, he has to chaperone some of those. And he said, Dad, you wouldn't believe some of the things that these young people try to get away with. Well, yeah, I would believe, because back then, before I was a Christian, I was one of those who was trying to get away with those same things. And there was nothing fun and wholesome. Well, yeah, it was fun, but there was nothing wholesome about it. I regret that our schools put our kids in this kind of a situation that makes them think they can do this. They can move in ways that encourage sexual temptation without doing something about it. You know as well as I do that if you give anybody an opportunity to get excited like that, they're going to look for ways to fulfill that excitement. Young people, the best way to do is just to not even go there in the first place. Find something else to do. You and I know that this last, May, we read about how everybody was wringing their hands and lamenting about how proms were being canceled. And I was thinking, great, there'll be that many less people who are going to be getting themselves into trouble for things that they shouldn't be doing anyway. Parents, help your kids in this area. And finally, take courage to stand against what we've been talking about. In 1 Thessalonians, go there with me, chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. In 1 Thessalonians 4, beginning in verse 3, Paul says, this is the will of God, your sanctification. Now, let's just stop there for a minute because that's a big, long Bible word. We need to know what it means. It just means you're different. If you've been baptized into Christ, if you have given yourself to Him, it means you're not like everybody else. You've been set apart. He has separated you for something better, for something holy. And Paul says, this is our purpose. He goes on to say, that is, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in lustful passions like the Gentiles who do not know God. Now, there are going to be plenty of your friends and plenty of all kinds of other people who are going to tell you that it's okay to fulfill this because, after all, it's natural, right? You've got the urge, and so you go find somebody to fulfill it with. God says, no, you're different. That's not the way it works for people who are called my people. And because we are sanctified, because we are different, we find ways in God's Word, in which to satisfy those urges, yes, that He Himself has placed in us, but He also gave us a fence called marriage, wherein we can exercise those activities freely. Don't forget who you are. Most of all, don't forget whose you are when you go back to school. And then we could talk about all kinds of other things that are going to challenge you, going to challenge your faith, your character. Let me just read something to you before we end. Somebody wrote, "Human life is about character building. Remember that character means exactly what we are, while reputation is only what other people think we are. Everyone builds his own character, but fix one fact in your mind, and that is, the better and stronger Christian you are, the more you must pay for it. All the best things are costly. Jesus Christ laid down His life to redeem you from sin and death. Grace for you meant the cross for Christ. And a strong, godly character won't be yours without a cost." Let me just tell our young people, just because you're young doesn't mean you can't be a leader. And just because you're young doesn't mean that you can't lead by example. Remember the passage that we started with? 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. Read it again. "Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. But set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity." You've been told this before. You're the generation of the future. And you're the future of this church. You're the future of the church in the world. And folks in my generation want to know that we're passing that baton off confidently to those who understand their place, not only in the world, but in the church and before God. We're going back to school. Are you ready? This is a different kind of checklist, isn't it? I hope that you thought about checking these things off your list. In a moment, we're going to stand and sing a song. And of course, the intention of that song is to get you to question, where am I before God? Maybe there's someone this morning who needs to either make the decision to be His by turning from sin and being immersed in water for the forgiveness of those sins, or to simply turn from the sin that's prevalent in their life and say, "I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to be a better person." Whatever your need is, we want to help you. Can we? Come now, please, while we stand and sing.